and make my videos better and take me to the next level. And I now have the income to support it. So all of those decisions start to make sense.
Yes, sir.
3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Learn Videography, a podcast dedicated to mastering the art and business of becoming a full-time videographer. Presented by Industry Jump. Break. Hosted by director Kyle Loftus and producer JJ Englert. Let's go.
Welcome back to Learn Videography, your podcast to learn everything you need to know about becoming a full-time videographer. As always, I'm your host, JJ, with my co-host, Kyle Loftus. And this week, we're talking about all things gear. Some of our favorites, but also the pros and cons of tackling different setups, whether it's a minimalist setup or targeted towards a specific niche or market. We're going to be talking through the pros and cons of all of that, how much you should buy, how much you shouldn't buy, all that kind of good stuff. But before we get into that, Kyle, how you doing, man?
Fighting the cold, but it's all right. We're winning. We're winning the battle. And good. It's going to be gone by the weekend. I'm manifesting it.
Perfect. There we go.
How about yourself?
Yeah. Man? Doing good. We got 2 feet of snow over in upstate New York. So it's a lot. But it's quite pretty. It's coming down pretty well. But you know, just adjusting to our first winter in New York. But things are going well, been really busy. On the Jump Studio side, we just launched emailing. And so this allows you to email your clients really simply. So of course, when you're in the Jump Studio CRM, you enter like your clients and your name, your email, and then your project's name and all that kind of stuff, right? And then within Jump Studios, within your project, we allow you to have like dynamic merge tags or whatever. So whenever you look at creating an email for that project with that client, we automatically fill in all of their information. So like, hey, their first name, we're working on this project name together, and all of that's automatically filled out for you to make it really simple, right? And then we also added templates to like give you a head start on, you know, responding to people if they didn't respond to you, or new leads that reached out to you, or sending them a final payment reminder, or sending them a video for review. We have all these templates in there, and everything is dynamically updated to be really personalized for that client and that project, which is really cool. And then you can also schedule those emails. So say you just finish a project and you're like, hey, I want to schedule an email 6 months from now, just checking in with them, right? To automate that stuff. So now you can do that in Jump Studios. So that's really cool. And then we started laying the groundwork for contracts and are preparing to do contracts next. I'm super stoked, man. We have a good amount of production companies using it now, finding success in it. And I just love to see that list growing. So if you guys haven't checked out Jump Studios yet, please go to jumpstudios.io.
Check it out.
Get started for free. Start the free 14-day trial. Check out our video review system. Check out the CRM system. Check out the email capability. See how you can integrate into your business to make everything much more scalable and to start really laying the foundation to build a big business.
Yes, sir.
Awesome. Yeah, and you know, like with this episode today, you know, in season one, we did an exhaustive gear list of everything we would recommend, right? Like,
for real.
Kyle, you were like whooped at the end of that episode. You know, for our audience, Kyle is the true specialist when it comes to gear. Me, on the other hand, I'm on the producing side, the directing side. I don't understand gear as much as Kyle. So when we get into these episodes, Kyle's like all in on it. But today we're going to have kind of a different approach, and we're really going to talk about the pros and cons of gear. And when to buy gear, when not to buy gear, when to rent gear, and how you can use this in your system and, you know, maybe help you make these decisions. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think just a reference, that episode is episode 7 of season one.
Season one.
Correct?
Yep.
Yeah. So if you guys haven't listened, or if you're new to the pod here, be sure to check it out. Super, super awesome episode. Again, we go super in depth about gear and which gear can kind of work better with different niches,
different tiers,
and different tiers, you know, of what kind of price range you're looking at to kind of get all that different gear. So super informative episode. And again, I think if you listen to that first and then follow up this episode, you'll get a really good idea of probably where you should be moving or next kind of purchases you should be making. And also, guys, if you haven't already, be sure to leave us a review. Check out the pod. Again, we got to get these reviews up. There's a ton of people out there that haven't discovered us yet, don't know about the number one videography podcast.
Let's go.
We need y'all's help.
I think we're at 60 reviews now. We're maybe one short of 60 reviews. If we could break 100 reviews by the end of season three, we will do something special for all y'all. All right? So if you can get there, go to Apple Podcasts, drop us a review. We'd really appreciate it. We put a lot into this podcast every week to make sure that we're helping you grow your video business along with the stuff that we're doing at Jump Studios and Industry Jump and all that kind of stuff. So if you have an extra moment to go to Apple Podcasts, leave us a review for Learn Videography. Really appreciate that. But getting into today's episode, Kyle, why don't we talk about your gear package first, okay? And then we could backtrack from that and then kind of talk into pros and cons and whatnot.
Sure. So, you know, for me, I have a couple different tiers or options. And again, these are just reference to, you know, the gear that I'm bringing out. And these kind of pertain, again, to like what I feel the project's going to require, gear, crew, location, etc. And so, you know, my, I guess, biggest starting point from the gear I personally own and utilize, I have a Ursa Mini Pro G2. So that's kind of like my A cam. My B cam is a Pocket 4K, and then like in my highest package, I'm going to provide you my Cinema Glass package, which I have 4 DZO Sin Prime Vesped Prime glass. So I have 100 millimeter 2.8, 90 macro 2.8, 50 millimeter 2.8, and then a 25 millimeter 2.8. So those are like the main lenses, main camera, B cam, you know, if for whatever reason the project requires a B camera. And then, you know, talking about lighting, base lighting package, you know, I include Forza 200 with, you know, all the modifiers you could want. So Fresnel, Softbox, Chimere, Honeycomb Grid, all that kind of jazz, Bowen hood mount, all that stuff comes with it. Obviously, C-stands, got to have C-stands for the lights.
How many C-stands but also, do you have?
Personally, I own 5. And so additionally, I'll have, Forza 60B, again, modifiers as well as a Leco, adapter for that as well. So if you don't know, like a Leco light, it's typically what people use as like a stage light, for like a spotlight concerts almost. And shows. But what's really cool about a Leco light, if you guys haven't heard of it, check it out because there's so many cool effects you can do. And I absolutely love using this light to make normally boring shots suddenly captivating or more interesting, you know, putting layers of light on the background. I love utilizing it, putting it on the wall, emulating or faking,
like a strobe window, light effect, you know,
strobe lights. There's a lot you can do with it. And especially if you get leaflets, which are kind of little slabs you can put in there to, again, kind of control the light. And so you can create fake shapes, not fake shapes. I mean, you can make squares, triangles, circles. And again, you can kind of like emulate, they have some that look kind of like shutters. So almost like sunlight was coming through your window, etc. So that's kind of like, I guess, base lighting, lens, grip gear. Again, you know, basically coming out with the C-stands. I have some black floppies and black flags. I have a balance board.
Nice.
I'm really only going to bring that stuff out if I need it for the project. Like, I guess technically I'm including it in my pack, my highest package. But again, being the director, being the DP, I know if I need those auto, I can't talk. I know if I need those items or not. So it kind of just depends on the project. And then when it comes to like stabilization, again, this is in reference to my style per se. So I use just a flow line. So it's essentially just a simple form of stabilization for the camera. Again, like I'm going to bring a Steadicam up out. It's an easy rig essentially, but Flow Line is the brand I use. It's a cheaper brand you can get online. Gotcha. It's like a quarter of the price, does the same job. Plug for y'all. There you go. And so, you know, outside of that, again, if the project requires it, I'm going to bring a Steadicam operator out. And this is something we'll get into later in the episode as we like examine niches and like, does the gear help you towards your career goals and stuff like that? But it's for that reason alone, like I'm not going to spend 10 grand and buy everything I need to have a fully operating Steadicam system because it's not what I want to do. Right. So I'm trying to be very smart and intentional about the gear and the packages I have as well. Now, we could go on and on about all these other different accessories I have, you know, filters, haze machine, fog, different stuff like that. But for now, let's just focus on like the kind of key important things. So that's like my top tier package of, you know, again, lighting, grip gear, cameras and stuff. Kind of jumping down a bit. Sorry, I missed some lights. Let's revert back. So I got the Nane lights. I also have six Nane Light Pavo 6Cs tube lights. I also have two Godox TL60 tube lights, which are about 2 feet long each. Okay. So two of those. All of these, again, are remote controllable as well. And then I want to say B70s. I'm blanking on the name, but they're the aperture light bulbs. I have four of mm-hmm. those as well. So these are legit light bulbs you can put in a light bulb socket, or you can literally charge these in a light bulb socket first, and then you can like actually just hold it, or you can set it anywhere without it being attached or plugged in, neat. And it can power for generally, if you get it all the way, full power, like 2 hours by itself. Wow. So it's a pretty cool little light and piece of effect you can have there. I don't think I'm missing any light now. That's pretty much it. I have little pocket lights, but we're not going to consider those. So that's pretty much it with that main top tier package. Now, as we jump down, again, me personally, I also want to make sure if I'm taking on a project, like I want it to be as good as possible. So I try and incentivize and motivate the client to jump up to those next levels by saying, you know, like essentially making them look at the proposal and say, wow, it's only $200 and we get all this other gear. We got to do it. Right. But my next level package.
Let me stop you there for a second.
Yeah, go ahead.
If you don't mind. So
what's up, guys? During this brief break, I just want to remind you of our season-long sponsor, Riverside, the number one podcast recording platform. We absolutely love it. We've been using it even before we use Zoom or any other platform. It's just absolutely incredible. For us, we absolutely love using it because of the high-quality video and audio recording that we're able to do for you, our listeners. Not only that, but you know, we can edit and we can chat in time, you know, while we're recording this podcast. The files come easily downloadable after recording. And you know, today, Riverside is used by over 70,000 different creators, ranging all over the place from Guy Raz to Gary Vee to Learn Videography, the number one podcast when it comes to videography. Guys, there's a reason so many people and so many creators are using Riverside. Check them out. All of their features that they have are at riverside.fm. You can create an account, go ahead, check them out, and get started today. Now let's get back to the episode.
You own all this gear, right? But you don't always bring all this gear out with you.
Correct.
So let's talk about that distinction. And I think because a lot of videographers were like, I'll just bring everything I got. It's all included, right? But then they're kind of short-selling themselves in the sense that, well, you can upsell them an additional gear. And that makes sense because you paid for that additional gear. It's an investment you're paying yourself back for, right? So talk us through your thought process on how you might try and upsell for additional gear packages or how you position your gear in that way.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I guess I would just start by saying first and foremost, you know, like there's no... The unfortunate thing with this career is there's no like one right answer. You know, things can always be changing or different. And so I mentioned that because, you know, for me, there's a lot of times where like a client doesn't pay for the higher package, but I might bring my best cameras and my best lenses, et cetera, out because why? Maybe I really like the client. They really align with my business. Maybe it's the perfect target audience brand. Yeah, you know, or it's it's a brand new brand. I understand they're short on cash. You know, it's about building a long-term relationship. So there's other factors you have to consider, of course. Mm-hmm. But for me, you know, the big way I try to incentivize it is so, for instance, if you're not getting that package right there, then, you know, my main package next I'm offering you is... One, you're just getting my pocket 4K. Now, if the shoot requires additional cameras, I'm going to hire out additional crew members. Luckily, a lot of people I work with here that I have within my network own Blackmagic Design cameras, be that a pocket 4K or a 6K. So I'll reach out to them, obviously hire them onto CamUp, and then you know pay them to supplement and bring out their pocket 4K. Additionally, I have some basic glass that I'll utilize. So I have a Canon Macro 90. I have a 16 to 35 f/2.8 version 3. And then I have a Tamron 24 to 70. f2.8, and then I have a Tamron 70-200 f2.8. But these are, again, these are like DSLR glass. It's solid glass, but like there's a noticeable difference in the quality between that and the cinema glass. Same thing with, sure, you know, the Pocket 4K and the Ursa Mini Pro G2. Not a ton per se. And I guess the quality, I definitely think the quality and more specifically the dynamic range, so the potential of what you can do with the video and post, mm-hmm, is a lot better. But overall, it's just the capabilities, the options, the different things you can do with that camera. Like for me, again, built-in NDs and being able to plug XLR directly into my camera, that right there is worth like it's the huge extra $2,000 for, yeah, me, as opposed to having a Pocket 4K. So I incentivize the client by essentially offering them a, you know, this baseline package. Let's just throw random numbers out there. Let's say for all the gear of, you know, my top tier package, let's say that's $750. Again, like I'm going to price at $525 or $550 for a Pocket 4K basic glass tripod. You know, I'm not going to even offer the Easy Rig or the Flowline, mm-hmm, system for stabilization. And then in regards to lighting, I'll offer a key light, and then I'll bring out my TL60 tube lights. So, wow, you're not getting a 3-point lighting setup. You're not getting all the C stands. You're not getting access to all my modifiers and grip gear. It's like a very, mm-hmm, very basic package. But again, like an extra $200, $250, you get all the other gear. So, mm-hmm, you kind of want to make it a no-brainer for the client. At least that's my thought process with it. And so, again, like we can jump down lower, but I'm also, yeah, at a point in my career where I'm not going to do anything lower. So like if I was to offer a lower package, you know, like I'd use my Canon R5 DSLR with, again, like, yeah, maybe one or two glass options, tripod, and probably just one light. You know, very, very base and minimal. But again, you know, there's a lot of factors and things you have to consider. Like at what point are, yeah, you at in your career? You know, if I'm doing just my Canon R5 and like a tripod and one light, it's probably like a $500, $600 gig. And that's just not, yeah, it's not worth my time. I mean, again, if you're early in your career, your first year and a half, maybe you're not doing it full time, like I'd highly consider the project. You know, it could be really beneficial for you. Mm-hmm. But for me personally, at this point in my career, you know, I'm probably not taking that on unless it can be a very good relationship, or I just see a lot of potential. Like there's got to be some other really good incentivizations to make me take on a project like that.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, I find it interesting that you have so many different cameras. Like why don't you just have one camera and you just bring that everywhere? Is it just you like different styles of cameras, or what? Why do you have so many?
I guess, all right, let's start by doing this. Let's rewind to when I was first starting out my career, okay? So I had a Canon DSLR. I had the Mark III. Then I decided to purchase the Sony A7S, or was the A7S II? I can't remember. One of the two. I did not have it for long. I do not like Sony. I do not like their color science. End of that story. So I bought that secondary camera because at the time I was doing a lot of weddings, and I loved my 5D Mark III because I was also doing a lot of photography work. You know, back when I first kind of started my career down here in Florida. So I needed the DSLR for photography work. I also love Canon's color science and utilizing that for video, but I needed the Sony because I wanted to be able to utilize two cameras on weddings and be able to move fast and efficiently. The Sony had autofocus and 4K and was really good in low light. So I loved using that for indoors, and I always kept it on I'm blanking here. Not my Steadicam.
Glidecam.
Thank you.
Boom.
So I had it sitting on my Glidecam, and then I would keep my Canon 5D Mark III just kind of on hand. And so I could easily switch between the two. You know, if I was going for gimbal movements, be that tracking or any kind of, you know, cool movement that I wanted, I'd use my Glidecam and my Sony. Or if I just needed some basic still shots or to lock it on tripod for ceremonies and toasts, I use the Canon 5D Mark III. Mm-hmm. Got rid of the Sony, and instead I got a Canon 5D Mark IV. So now I had those two cameras for A cam, B cam. Fast forward a little bit of time, I got the Pocket 4K. So again, taking my career path more seriously, I wanted to level up and be more of a cinematographer.
How was that adjustment for you?
It wasn't bad, you know,
because like more of a cinema focus, like you really need to control your aperture, your exposure, shutter,
I think. Yeah, I mean, again, it's all relatively the same. Like, you're dealing with shutter speed with Canon as compared to, you know, Pocket 4K and Blackmagic, you're dealing with shutter angle. Little trinkets like that, you know, little differences, but predominantly, you know, it wasn't like a huge learning curve. I think just the cool thing about it was like having this camera really put me in the mindset of I'm a cinematographer. Like, I got to start acting like it and treating myself like that. And I think one of the really cool challenges about it, for instance, was it not being an autofocus. So me consciously deciding to purchase another camera without autofocus, but understanding like, you know, you're not really seeing cinema cameras used at the professional level that are utilizing autofocus, really. You know, like there's beauty in having that manual focus, and again, down the road, utilizing an AC, someone to pull focus and do that for you, different things like that. So I got that Pocket 4K because, again, I wanted to level up and do better cinema production. Now, at this point, let's say this was probably 3 years ago, something like that. So I got the Pocket 4K. I'm not doing photo anymore at this point, not doing corporate. I'm really just doing commercials, weddings, and music videos. Okay. So again, I need two cameras because I'm doing weddings and I'm doing a lot of corporate work. So like having a two camera setup minimal is you got to have it if you're going to do ceremonies and toasts.
Yeah.
So I knew that, again, interviews, wanted to have A cam and B cam options as well. And then, you know, I guess, again, fast forwarding to, so the Pocket was 3 years ago, because now I think about it. So I've had the Ursa Mini Pro G2 for 2 years. So 2 years ago, you know, I purchased the Ursa Mini Pro G2. And again, that was with the idea of like, I'm ready for the next level. It's time to level up and get the next best camera like I can get and I want to use. Mm-hmm. I got the Ursa Mini Pro G2 because cost effective and affordable. You know, it's a $6,000 camera. I didn't want to buy a Red for $30,000, and I don't think you need a $30,000 camera. I believe more in my abilities with light and directing and just you know, framing, composition, things like that. I think can create a much more captivating image than just buying a really expensive camera. So I got the Ursa Mini Pro G2 for that reason. And then additionally, again, I had the Pocket 4K. So keeping things native, same color science, same camera. That's super helpful. Saves a ton of time in post-production and gets you a really good, solidified, constant look. And additionally, like Blackmagic design, I absolutely love their color science. I think they just, you get beautiful images out of those cameras. So yeah, that's kind of why I got those cameras. And then you look at me now, you know, it's kind of, sometimes I wonder, you know, if it's a stupid decision. So I got rid of my 5D Mark III and my 5D Mark IV. Got rid of those and I got the Canon R5. The reason I have the Canon R5 is, you know, if I'm just traveling for fun and I don't have any kind of project I'm trying to film or record, I'll just take that, you know, to take some videos, take some random photos. But more specifically, the Canon R5 is for behind the scenes. So this is the camera my behind the scenes photographer and videographer is using. The reason I do that is, one, some behind-the-scenes photographers and videographers, they charge. Well, obviously, they charge for the services. I hope they do. But they charge to utilize their camera and to use their glass. So that's an additional fee. Additionally, I was utilizing different people, and I was getting different cameras. Oh, so God. I was getting different looks. So not only, again, this is a focus, I think, again, there's a lot of things you're going to learn on your career path, but like nowadays, I pretty much use the same two people for BTS. I have one main person. Shouts to Ellie Udabom, if you're listening to this. Ellie, she's amazing.
Let's go.
But if Ellie's not amazing, I'm going to hire out probably Sei Oluwasei or my buddy Manuel, who they don't specialize in behind the scenes, but they're very good at it. They, you know, and again, they're my friends. So if I can hire them out, bring them on a set, I'm going to do it. Love to have them around. So I like to have that because it's consistent. And then also I like them to always use my camera because again, it's consistent. So it keeps my branding on point. You know, it's the same reason I always use one of the same 10 presets for all the photos that you'll see of me out there is because I want to keep the branding consistent. So 10-minute answer is is that
So what we're getting at here is you have a variety of setup, right? And you're picking and choosing what you're bringing to which projects. You're also upselling clients when you have the opportunity to say, hey, instead of bringing out this project, this package, I'll bring out this package, right? And make a little bit of extra money there, which is fantastic. I guess now let's look at it on the other side. Like, we just went through a lot of gear, right? Now let's look at it from the videographer side, where let's say their average video is like $2,500, okay? So they're doing like event videos or music videos or small little commercials for like $2,500. What do you think would be a good setup for them without having to like really go spend too much money, but like just enough to like, hey, you can knock out as many videos as you want at this level? What would you recommend to them?
So I would have at least like a base 3-light setup. So again, that could be like similar to me. That could be a Forza 200. Make sure you have a softbox or a Shimera with that. Then, you know, like a secondary light, again, like my case could be like the Forza 60B. And then, you know, if you want to like, I mean, personally, I would use that as like the hair light with a Leco adapter. And then if I needed like a fill, I would use one of my tube lights. But you know, like other brands, like obviously like you could do Aperture, you know, you could do like an Aperture 600D for your key. You could do a fill with a 200D. And then you could do like another 200D or a 120D with like a Leco adapter for your hair light or something like that. Okay. Or you could just use a 120D and a Fresnel for your hair light. Like there's a lot of options like that. Again, personally, like I think Nainlight is maybe it's a little subpar to Aperture. But again, for me, like the price, it's just way more affordable, makes way more sense for me personally than buying into Aperture. So I'll just use Nainlight and kind of Godox as reference.
I think that's, you know, an important distinction too. It's like, yeah, you could pay up, you know, for that a little extra, more expensive light. But in the end, you know, like your client, they need results, right? Like they're not going to see that little difference, right? And like at this point, the cameras are so good that like, yes, to trained eye, they could probably tell a difference. But like if you're just going from, you know, one brand to another in the light sense, you know, I think it's like totally fine at this point, especially at this level, right? Where you're doing $2,500 videos.
That actually reminds me too quickly. I just want to mention, you know, like another reason I leveled up and got the Ursa Mini Pro G2, and like people can hate and laugh on it as much as they want, but the facts of the matter is it works. Is like I also got it because I wanted to charge more. I wanted to make more money. And whether you like it or not, you put an easy rig over yourself and you have a big fat ergonomic camera, like an Ursa Mini Pro G2, and you have Cima Glass on there. It fits the part. It looks the part, and instantly, I tell you, I'm not even joking. You know, instantly, I was almost able to charge, you know, like $1,000 more, $1,500 more for every project just because I had this camera. Again, you know, I bring out all the time. Again, it's similar to how I feel like the industry was about Reds, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. You know, it's like every time I bring out the set, like they're always asking, like, is that a Red? Dang, bro, like nice camera, like let me, you know, like it's just, and again, like we all were listening, we all know, we're all videographers, cinematographers, like we know it doesn't necessarily make that big of a difference. Like you can achieve just the same looks with a DSLR camera if you know what you're doing with lighting, with composition, with actors, etc. But the fact of the matter is it's perceived value to the client, and perceived value is everything. Now getting back to kind of what we're talking about earlier with the $2,500, you know, again, I would start with like a base 3-light package. So again, using Nainlight as a reference, like I would use the Forza 60B for your hair light. I'd use my Forza 200 for the key light. And then again, if I needed a fill, I'd use like a Nainlight Pavo 6C tube light. And then camera wise, again, me personally, I really like Blackmagic design, so I'd recommend the Pocket 4K. Again, it's going to be the most affordable, but like if you have the budget, it's not that much more. The Pocket 6K is a great camera. I mean, the great thing nowadays is like all the cameras are so good. You know, I mean, I think it's be mindful of like where you're at in your career, what all you're trying to do, you know, and where you're trying to go. So again, like, are you 1 to 2 years in, 1 to 3 years in? Do you love photo? Do you want to do photo and video? Well, then maybe get a DSLR if you don't have a camera right now. But if you're really trying to just focus on video and your goals are to maintain in this career path, be that a, I don't know, an AC, a director, a DP, a producer, what have you, you're maintaining in video, then I'd really recommend getting a cinema camera. And I think the cheapest point of entry camera for that is the Pocket 4K. Yeah. So you're going to, it's really, again, I think it's really, really important at some point that like you have to kind of flip that switch and say like, I'm a cinematographer, and just start really treating yourself like that and buying the gear that forces you to really kind of think and adjust and move like a cinematographer. Again, like,
yeah,
just not having autofocus. I cannot even explain to you how much that changed my style and the way I thought about and filmed, because mm-hmm. like you can't just rely on autofocus anymore. Like you don't have that safety net, that backup to protect you. And also like if you're doing tracking shots or anything that has a lot of movement, like now you really need to think about like, do I need to hire extra crew? Do I need other forms of stabilization? So that's probably like the baseline package. Again, grip wise, yeah. Like I'd probably buy one or two C stands, and then I'd have like 2 to 3 light stands. Light stands are cheaper. They can hold up your tube lights. They can hold up a 6 dB, but you want to have at least 1 to 2 C stands for your key light. And then also, you know, maybe want to have that second one for some kind of, essentially some kind of diffusion that you can use. And again, you know, when I first started out in my career, like I wasn't even buying actual like Duvetyn or Black Flags or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And honestly, guys, like I'm a very DIY, like I'm not big on buying all the latest and greatest tech and all that. You know, if it does the job, if it works, great, get it. You know, again, yeah. So using C-stands as a reference, again, really quick, I own newer C-stands. You know, you can get Manfrotto C-stands, you know, name brand, well-known, respected. But it's like an extra couple $100s. I'll take the cheaper version that works really well. Also, newer mm-hmm. has this nice little hand cushion on it. I dig that.
Very nice. Very nice.
Now, kind of, you know, moving forward from that, again, kind of like looking,
Let me get in here quick. So we have this package, probably $4,000 or $5,000 to put together this package, if not a little bit more, right? But it's getting you to the point where you can charge $2,500, $2,000 for videos, right? And it's also able to really deliver great content. Like, you know, we're getting to the point where, like, if you know how to shoot, you can't really tell what camera it's being shot on anymore, right? And so it's like one of those things where it's like, get that basic package, you know, level it up when you can, but really make sure that you're making money first. You're not just spending $10,000 just to spend $10,000. Right. And also, I think a little bit to what you said earlier, and I'm going to go against it a little bit, but then come back to you in the sense that like buying a new camera, a lot of us are like, if I'm going to buy a new camera and I'm just going to charge more, right? Understandable, because you just made this investment. But at the same time, your client is like, well, I need to get results. You know, I'm looking for this type of video, like, but I'm not looking for, you know, like cinematic lighting with all this stuff coming in, and like, you're not going to sell me on like smoke effects and whatnot. Like I need to get results, right? Like I need to get more sales, and that's what's most important for me. So during this gear episode, I'm like, there's so much gear. Let's not lose focus. And also the same time of just like, you know, we're buying this gear to help with these videos, to help our clients get the results they need. Right. And let's not just get lost in the fact of we also want to make a really beautiful project.
For sure.
They're not going to hire you to just make a beautiful video. Right.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that you're saying that. I'm just reminding all of us in the audience that we need to have that lens with this conversation.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, again, like, I'm not saying either that like when I'm mentioning like this baseline package of like those name light lights and the two C stands and light stands, I'm not saying like get all of those at once. Like it's a mm-hmm. it's a progression, you know, like you progressively invest. But, you know, like using myself as an example, I think like this is where building relationships and partnerships is so useful. Like yeah. I had, you know, when I had the Pocket 4K, I think I had an Aputure 120D. And I think I had maybe like some LED panels and maybe like a Godox 60 60 or SSB or something like that. Like a small, I did not have a quality setup and package, but again, by utilizing.
Were you making good, money?
Yeah, I was making money. But again, it's like I can make really good video with that, but simply by hiring crew that has access to other gear.
Yeah.
I can level up what I can provide to the client to then invest and get that piece of gear myself. So I don't have to like pay that little bit of upcharge for the contractor I'm hiring. So it's a process. Like I'm not saying like get all this stuff and then like you're good to go and you can work those $2,500 videos. It's definitely a process. But I think if you're doing $2,500 videos, I think like as a bare minimum, you should definitely have like 3-point lighting. You should have a cinema camera. You should have 2 to 3 lenses you can offer. Obviously, like you need to have some sort of audio package, like a lav mic or a shotgun mic, ideally both. But again, like process over time, you know, so like I'd probably recommend a lav mic first and foremost, just because, you know, a bit better safety net can work more robustly for commercials or events or weddings. And then eventually, once you get some more money in your bank account, then you can invest and get like a quality shotgun mic. And then eventually, you know, probably want to get like a Zoom H6 or something like that as well. But again, that's all stuff for down the road. Again, like as JJ mentioned, it's like being mindful of like the limitations you need to set on yourself when it comes to purchases. So again, like if you have a key light right now, let's say you have the Forza 200, you have a softbox and you have a pocket 4K. And let's say, you know, you've got a project coming on, it's $2,500 and another potential one the next month down the road, but you only have $600 in your bank account, but you have a credit card, like you could buy the stuff with credit card. I'd probably wait. I'd utilize crew. I'd utilize crew to get access to the other gear that you might need, and you can charge the client for that gear. And again, down the road, after you've worked maybe those two $2,500 gigs, you've been able to pocket maybe, I don't know, let's say after all expenses and such, like $1,200, maybe $2,000 from the two projects in total. Well, with that $2,000, like you could get another light, you could get your audio. So it's definitely a progression. Like you're not going to, I wouldn't buy all this stuff all at once, but like that's kind of the baseline area I'd probably sit in if I'm offering clients $2,500 videos.
Yeah. It's that, it's a tough balance, right? Because we need to have the gear to make the video, simply put. But at the same time, we're also, we want to make money, right? And we don't want to just completely reinvest all of it, right? So finding that balance of like, well, how much do I reinvest and how much do I actually keep for myself, right? And I also think that something that goes into this too is, you know, when you're working through new projects, you know, like say you're taking the next step up, right? And you're like, well, I'm going to need a more professional camera for that. Well, it's okay to like rent cameras or to find friends that have the camera that you want to try out or that you're thinking about buying. And use that for a project or two. You know what I mean? And yeah, you're not going to make as much money on that project because you're paying someone else to bring their camera. But you're getting the feel of what it'd be like to have that camera. And also, you're getting the results of you're still getting paid for this gig. You're talking with this client. And you can see like, hey, is this camera, is this package really allowing me to make more money and deliver better results because of such? Then it's probably worth it. But if it's like, they didn't even notice, you know, like nothing is... I didn't even get paid as much as I normally get paid. So it's like, probably it's not time for you to get that camera then. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's just understanding and evaluating each situation of when it's good for you to, you know, get that camera, upgrade your package or when it's not, depending on your clientele, how many clients you're getting, how many videos you're doing each month, what those budgets are. So again, there's no real science to it. It's really just you understanding what, how much money you need to make, how much money you're willing to invest. And at the same time, you know, leveraging that to charge more and more for each video with all that into play. So it's difficult.
Yeah. And I think, you know, kind of as you mentioned there, like evaluating too, you know, I mean, I know we want to get into niches and stuff, but maybe we just talk briefly here about, again, like the importance of analyzing where you're at in your career and where you want to go. You know, so again, using myself as an example, we kind of were talking about it here before the episode got started. I'm at a point in my career where I'm not really buying much more gear because it's not necessarily going to move me in the direction I want to go. Whereas investing in a course or investing in going to an event to speak or going just to a networking event in and of itself, different things like that are really going to help me and aid my career as a director or a DP.
Yeah. Maybe even taking less money on a project, you know, so you can get that project in your portfolio.
Yes. Yes.
Specking stuff out, you know?
100%. Spec ads, you know, that's a big thing I'm investing in this year. Well, spec ads, yes, but more specifically short film content. Because I do want to kind of, again, I'm working towards being a feature film director and directing series. So that's kind of where I'm investing my money right now. You know, I'm not going to go invest in a bunch of more lighting gear or grip gear because I don't want to be a gaffer. I don't want to be a grip guy. I don't want to own a one-ton grip truck. You know, I'd rather hire those people out, let those people have all that gear and specialize in that. So it's really, really important to be mindful of kind of those elements as well as like you're analyzing and thinking about all this stuff. So again, as I mentioned earlier in the episode, you know, like, do you see yourself as a cinematographer or like,
maybe you're
still unsure. You're floating the boat.
Yeah.
I'd get a DSLR. I'd stick with that.
Yeah. Like me, for example, I'm a producer, right? And so whenever I put together my projects, I'd hire other people. Like my projects were 10, 5, 10, 20, 30,000. So I never really had the need to buy all the gear myself, right? Because I would just rent it all out, right? So, again, to your point, it depends on your position, also the types of videos you're working on, and if you have the budget to rent out that stuff. And like in my situation, we were renting Reds or Alexas or whatever. So I wasn't going to spend 50 grand on that camera anyways, right? Yeah, it just depends on the situation.
What's up, guys? Wanted to stop you really quick and talk about our special sponsor today, ShareGrid. They are the largest camera and sharing community out there. You can rent and buy professional cinema gear. I absolutely love using this platform. It's perfect for trying out any new cameras that you might want to use. And if you're interested in upgrading to new cameras, maybe you want to test out a 6K, an 8K, maybe a 12K. It's all out there and available for you to rent and buy. Or maybe if you're interested in selling and renting out your own gear to make a little side money, then this is available on ShareGrid as well. It's the most professional way of renting, selling, and trading gear. It's safe and secure, professionally insurance-backed. Guys, it doesn't get better than this. Join the camera sharing community today. You can rent and buy professional videography gear in your community. Yeah, 100%. And I think it's not just situational either, but, you know, again, I think it's dependent upon, I guess, three main factors I think of, you know, is situationally, career driven. And then again, you know, if we kind of want to jump into it as it pertains to niche, you know, so like what, I guess that relatively aligns with like, what are your career goals, you know, but like,
yeah,
I think what you need to be able to have or what gear you have or can offer is going to vary depending upon the different styles of video that you're doing. You know, 100%. So you
mentioned wedding videography earlier and that you needed two cameras, right? For certain shots at that wedding. But if you were in music video, for example, like you don't really need two cameras for music video production, right?
No.
Like you don't even need an audio package really for music video production. You would probably
hire an audio guy. If for whatever reason, you're going to do a couple scenes with dialogue.
Exactly. But, you know, you'd probably want a stabilizer, like a gimbal or something like that for really nice, like smooth movements in the music video scene with like, a camera that's probably good in lower light, you know, given the nighttime environments and the club scenes and the restaurants, stuff like that. And then those strobe lights, you know, that type of lighting package to go with, you know, the atmospheres that you're creating, a haze machine, you know, like that kind of thing. Like for that industry, it's totally different than, let's say, a wedding where you want cameras with autofocus, you know, telephoto lens, like 70-200, right, to really get in there. Photo cameras, video cameras, most likely gimbal, drone for like overhead shots, movement shots, you know. Yeah, it's a completely different package.
Yeah, 100%. You know, I mean, I think the important thing is, one, to get like, I guess, involved in the niche first and like figure out again, like, because I think part of it too is like, what is your style again, you know? So yeah. I think that can kind of pertain and affect these different things a little bit, but predominantly, like, as JJ mentioned, like, they're relatively kind of sitting in stone. So, like, again, like, talking about my opinion on things personally really quick, like weddings, you know, I think, like, weddings, you know, your focus is more on quality, cameras, glass, and audio. You know, a lot of weddings, I guess this depends on your environment. I live in Florida. Gotta be aware of that. So most of the weddings are outdoors in Florida. And then obviously, like, you'll have some stuff indoors at night. So, like, you maybe want to have one or two lights you can bring in. Me personally, when I did weddings, again, I made sure to have really good quality cameras for low light. So mm-hmm. I'd really just bring a light like this. Like, I just bring a mm-hmm. tube light with me. And I would just use that tube light. And kind of just hold it up in front of the camera, or I'd use like a spider arm, like a
ring light or anything like that,
or something like that. Personally, I didn't use a ring light for weddings. Yeah. But that's just because I had tube lights. I didn't see the need to buy ring lights when gotcha. I already had the access with the tube lights. Again, as JJ mentioned, like music videos, you know, you're not going to need audio gear for that. You're really going to just need like a quality cinema camera, ideally cinema glass as well, or quality glass. And then you're going to want, you know, some lighting packages that offer a bit more effects and fun. So like, you're probably going to be getting or be nice to have like a Quasar tube light kit or a Astera tube light kit. Or again, luckily a lot of LEDs that are sold nowadays have effects packages that come with them. Anything from like a disco party mode to cop lights to a fake fireplace or TV, etc. Events, you know, I think the big, again, this can always technically vary, but predominantly events, I think the big things like you're really investing in there is, again, audio and cameras, more specifically cameras.
Mm-hmm. You're gonna be having one time for your camera, right?
Yep. So you're gonna want like multiple cameras, and you're gonna want a camera probably that has time code. So you can kind of track and have all of that.
And that you can just like let run for like an hour or two.
Yep. or more. But it's really, again, it's like being mindful of the niches you're in, and again, like where you want to go with your career. So what kind of gear you might need, or where that gear is more so focused in. I think if you can kind of keep those things in the forefront of your mind when you're making purchasing decisions, it can make making those decisions a lot easier. You know, similar to like all you guys, I mean, there's a million different pieces of gear that I'd love to have. I'd love to put in my kit. I feel like we've all generally got five things on our next to get item list, right? So I think if you can analyze things from a perspective of what is the niche that I'm in right now, or what niche do I want to focus on? Where do I want to go in my career? I think just those alone can really help you in that next purchasing decision.
Yeah. You know what I also really love to do is like, if I have a big project coming up, right? So like, I just landed like a $10,000 video, and this video is calling for something specific, and that thing I'm going to use a lot more. I probably take this opportunity to reinvest my profits from that video to buy that thing that I need for that video that I can then use, you know? And so it's like, I got a big project. I'm taking, you know, profit from that. I'm also reinvesting in a certain thing that I need or gear wise for that video. And only doing that when I have that income secured. I'm not going out 6 months ahead of time on a credit card doing that, right? So also balancing that, because you need to eat, you got to rent to pay, all this kind of stuff, right? So you just got to make sure that you're balancing your income with the amount that you're reinvesting into it. And then at the same time, we could also look at alternative revenue streams of saying like, hey, when I'm not using this camera, can I rent it out to someone, right? Or can I, you know, bring this camera to be a second shooter and something for someone? Or, you know, could I sell these assets, right? And like, think about, you know, the resale value that you might get for something. Like, cinema glass or glass in general has pretty good resale value. Cameras, on the other hand, they don't have the best resale value, you know? And so also thinking about resale value, how everything holds up, how quick something is going to go, you know, like out of style or out of date. Like cameras, like every year or two, new cameras are coming out. But like lighting, C-stands, sandbags, glass, like that's in it for the long haul. You know what I mean? And so you should think about that when you're making your decisions as well.
Yeah, definitely.
anything else you want to talk about with niches that might be important? You know, we talked about music video, wedding, events, you know, short films and narrative stuff, more on the cinema side, more of the, you know, bigger lighting packages. You don't have to. You could always do natural light and whatnot. You could make do with anything. But generally, it is more, you know, on the cinema side, the narrative side, that kind of stuff. Real estate, you know, really important to have, you know, probably autofocus on a gimbal, a drone camera.
My big thing is I would really just say don't bite off more than you can chew. Yeah. And, you know, I just say that from experience. Again, using myself as an example, like I've really now been doing this for, you know, 6-7 years. I've really kind of learned myself, my process, and how much things are really needed or necessary, or how often I'm really using them.
Yeah.
So, you know, using audio as an example, again, like technically, it wouldn't be a bad idea to like buy better audio gear than I already have, because I need audio vast majority of my shoots. However, I don't want to get better, specialize in audio, and I don't want to spend more money on more and better audio gear. What I have right now works well for what I mainly need it for. And if I need better gear, and especially if it's a project where I just, for whatever reason, I can't make it work with what I have, again, I'm hiring out a boom operator. I'm hiring out a sound mixer. Like, I'm hiring a professional to do that job. I'm not going to do that myself. Again, biting off more than you can chew. You know, I've got some buddies here that, here in the area locally that are gearheads. You know, they'll buy the latest and best lighting gear that comes out. They'll use it a couple times and then they'll just sell it because they're not actually using it consistently.
Yeah.
So again, like I say that because that was something I found myself doing early in my career and luckily stopped. And then also thank the Lord for Amazon Prime. So that helps as well with returns. But you know, I quickly learned that, like, again, like really understanding how often or how much you're really going to utilize this gear is really, really important. And again, like understanding what you have access to through other people. So again, like through my network here in Florida, I have access to a ton of gear. For instance, my one buddy Herb, he has two different fog machines. He has a dry ice machine. He has a hazer. It's like, I'm not going to go buy any of that stuff. I'm going to hire him out
to
bring him out on the project. Now, however, I do personally have a fog machine personally that I own. Now, it's a very cheap one, but why did I buy that? Well, I made the conscious decision to buy that because, well, it was only $35-40. And also, I understand that I'm not going to be able to, let's be realistic here, I want to, but I'm not going to be able to hire Herb out on every single project. How often are you really saying, like, damn, if I just had a little more light, or if I just had better audio, you know, like, if you find yourself saying stuff like that a lot, maybe it's next time to make that purchase. Again, use another example. Like, I was about to buy the Mavic Pro 2, and then I sat there and I looked at myself and I said, why would I get this? Actually, you know what? I'm going to sell my Mavic. I'm going to sell my Mavic Pro. And so I don't even own a drone at all now. Why? Because, again, well, multiple reasons. I don't want the responsibility. I don't want to have to do the FAA regulation. And then also, again, I'm at a point in my career where I have a promise that I have to commit to and I have to complete with all my clients. You know, I've reached a level and I have a quality level of work that I have to guarantee, you know, and so I need my drone footage to match that. So again, I'm not operating a drone every week or every other day. Like, when I had one, I was flying it when I went on vacation, or like maybe once every two or three months. They're fun, but I'm rarely doing it. So I said, you know what?
And if you do it, you want to do it really well. Exactly. You hire a specialist to match the quality that you would need. And also, like, if, you know, like, you can't be doing everything on set, right? Like, you can only be so many places. And so, like, if you need to be shooting with the talent and then also doing drone stuff, like, you need additional help, right? Like, just because you don't have a drone doesn't mean you can't get drone footage, right? And also, you only need a couple shots, so they can just show up for an hour, get those shots, and then bounce, right? And so, yeah, be smart about it. Be creative. Be thrifty. And to your point, rule of thumb, like, don't buy it until, like, you had, like, 3, 4, 5 projects where it's like, all right, this would make a lot of sense for me, right? And I think I could, you know, make some more money because I could, you know, do these things for my clients better, or my clients would see this perceived value more, right? And this could help level me up and make my videos better and take me to the next level. And I now have the income to support it. So all of those decisions start to make sense.
Yes, sir.
Speaking of lighting, my lighting just died over here. So gradually getting darker throughout this episode, which I think is probably a good place for us to end it for today. I'm also going to put in the link to the gear list that Kyle originally created in season one in the show notes for this episode. So if you want to go back and see the tiers of gear that he has listed, that's a great episode, great resource that you could find in the show notes for this podcast. Again, if you haven't left us a review, please go over to Apple iTunes, leave us a review on our podcast. We'd really appreciate it. And then, of course, you got to check out Jump Studios, www.jumpstudios.io. Get started for free today. We'd love to see you there. Send us notes of feedback, how we can improve the podcast, how we can improve Jump Studios. In general, just let us know that, you know, how we can help you so we can both succeed together. But really appreciate all of you guys tuning in to another episode of Learn Videography. I'm your host, JJ. You can find me at JJ Engler on Instagram and Twitter and all those things. And you can follow Kyle at Cal Visuals on the same. And Kyle's got a booming TikTok presence. He's up and coming on the TikTok game too. So
we're working on it, man. Don't make me look too big. He's getting there. Like 1,500. Making the switch.
Hey, you know what? Great content though. Great content.
Appreciate that, man.
No problem. So, hey, we'll catch you guys next week on Learn Videography. We have a special guest coming in. We won't say who yet, but we will catch you next week on Learn Videography. And until then, see you guys later.
Be easy.